Music industry secrets. Music industry secrets. Music industry secrets. Spilled.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Music Industry Secrets Spilled with me, your host, Lucy May Walker. On today's episode, I am joined by the lovely Steve Tandy. So Steve runs Cop Media, which is a promotion company specialising in regional radio and TV. You and I might recognise that as a plugger. This guy knows his stuff. He has been working in the industry for over 30 years, so he has quite a lot to say about it. And you can tell in this interview how passionate he is about his job. I know from my own experience, whenever I've looked into hiring a plugger, I've just wanted to know so many things, like so many questions about costs, what an impact date is, what do pluggers actually do, how radio playlists are curated. That is a big, big one for me. And how important regional, commercial and student radio can actually be for an artist's career, especially in those early stages. And I ask Steve, all of the above. So if you're interested in hearing more about radio and TV, and especially if you're an artist who wants to get played on radio, this is an episode well worth listening to. He gives some brilliant advice. And buckle in. Here is Music Industry Secrets Spilled with Cop Media's Steve Tandy. Steve Tandy, welcome to Music Industry Secrets Spilled.
Woo! Welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, thank you for thanks so much, because I know you're a busy, busy man. So thanks for fitting me in.
Well, that's all right. I'm always pleased to support new artists, and some of our roster is obviously very well known, but every artist started at ground zero.
Yeah.
I hope I can be of some use. I'm not sure I can, but...
Yes, of course you can. Well, let's kick it off. If you can tell the listeners who you are and what your role is at Cop Media and a little bit about the company.
Okay, so my name's Steve Tandy. I'm Managing Director of Cop Media. Cop Media stands for Carry On Plugging.
Oh, nice.
Because I do sound like Kenneth Williams. I thought I'd say that before the listeners do. And I've been in total regional radio and TV plugging for 33 years. I obviously started extremely young. And the only reason I'm MD of the company is because I started the company. The top tip in business: if you want to become managing director, start a limited company and then you automatically become managing director. And I also for many years was T-boy and main IT person, and I still am. But my previous company to this, Cop Media, is 14 years old now. Before this, I was at Gut Records with a company called Intermedia, which I founded, a regional promotions. And at that company, I did all of loads and loads and about 15 years of plugging. The record label is probably best known as an independent label for the likes of Right Said Fred and Tom Jones' Duets album, and dare I say, The Crazy Frog. Don't shoot me down. But it did sell a lot of records.
Oh, God, yeah. So many.
Love it or hate it. Anyway, I don't think you wouldn't be able to get away with that sort of thing now. It would all just sit online and on social medias and stuff.
Yeah.
I think you'd probably have press to actually make money out of it. So, I mean, it's silliness, but we've gone on to promote all sorts of stuff. I mean, as I often say, I've done everybody from Björk to the Cheeky Girls. And I'm not a musical snob. I believe I work in an area of radio which is, we do specialty shows, which obviously we're only going with a certain type of music and serious music. But a lot of the time I'm working with the mainstream, BBC, and commercial radio. And people do like a bit of fun on the radio. I mean, it's about the music, but that's not the only reason people listen to music. So you've got to adapt, you know. If you're working something cool and credible, you're not going to treat it in the same way as you are a bit of a fun thing.
But for sure.
I don't think novelty records survive anymore, apart from those amazing couple that do that over the last 5 years, have done that Christmas sausage roll record.
Oh, Lad Baby.
Yeah, which I love. I didn't plug it, and I love it. I think it's back to that before X Factor. That's when you used to be able to have a fun Christmas record, and then X Factor came along, we all knew it was going to be number one at Christmas. But good on them, I say, and a great cause as well. So more serious stuff, but all genres, and we cover basically, plugging is divided into two areas. So there's national and regional. Each plugging area is done separately. So you have national radio pluggers who look after national radio. So that's BBC 1, 2, 6, 4, 5 Live. Then you've got national TV pluggers who look after all the mainstream TVs from your BBC Breakfast to your Shiny Floors, you know, Strictly and all that. And then you've got regional radio pluggers and TV, which is us lot. And we look after everything else. So everything outside, mainly everything outside London.
So I think like a lot of artists can get so wrapped up with like their dream is to be on a BBC Radio 1 playlist. But like you say, you work mainly in regional radio.
Yeah.
How important is regional radio and TV, and how can that be like an integral part of your career?
Okay, so when I started plugging, don't worry, I'm not going to go through 33 years, we'll be here all day. But when I started plugging in late 89, there was very little regional radio, commercial radio. It was very small. And to be honest with you, the music industry didn't take it very seriously. In those days, you know, if you got on Radio 1, Saturday morning kids TV, Top of the Pops, it was very simple in those days. There was no social media. When I came in, but in the 90s, commercial radio really took off, became huge in the noughties, the 90s and the noughties, and the 10s, really, with many, 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 many stations. So it was almost like every town has a commercial radio station. Over recent years, that's condensed and gone into groups. I think, let's be honest, what I do is absolutely vital for the world and humanity, obviously.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the world would stop spinning if I was not plugging.
I agree.
Regional radio. But I believe there might be a train of thought that obviously if you are going to get on a big national station that's got a big audience, obviously a play on there is going to be a play on there reaching a lot more people. Also, the different stations have different demographics of audience. So your Radio 1 audience is different to your 2 audience. Your BBC local radio is different to your commercial radio. You know, commercial radio on the whole tend to go for a female bias because I believe they spend more money with advertisers than males do. And that has always been the case. So females, and I'm not being sexist or anything when I say this.
No, that's really interesting,
So a lot, there's always often a little bit of a screw. Probably is not, I don't think it's as clear cut as that in these days, if I'm honest with you. I think it's not as clear as that. But a lot of commercial radios, and there's different types of commercial radio. You know, Absolute is not the same as Capital. Capital is not the same as Hits. Hits is not the same as Nation Group. You know, there are differences. But yeah. I think commercial radio, obviously, as the name suggests, it's funded by advertisers. And those advertisers need to hit a certain demographic. The same with the way they advertise on TV. So they're going to go for areas that have their, you know, there are national advertising brands. But what regional radio, commercial radio is really good at, and particularly not the big groups, but the smaller independent commercial radios and groups, they're very good at local advertising. So if you're a hairdresser in Wolverhampton, you're not going to have the money or want to reach people in Scotland or London, but you are wanting to reach the people in Wolverhampton, and that's where your local commercial radio, and that's where they can win.
For artists, it's kind of, let's say I was putting on a gig in Aberdeen and you managed to get me an interview on an Aberdeen radio show.
Yes.
It's likely that I'm going to reach the right people and sell tickets to those people rather than being on Radio 2 and selling Aberdeen.
Yeah, I mean, being on Radio 2 or Radio 1 is absolutely great, and it helps us as well in our regional world because people are always looking at what else other people are doing, you know. So if you've got plot, we call it, if you've got a plot growing at 1 or at 2 or 6, it helps. It's a bit of a jigsaw, really. I think if you're starting as a new artist, however, what really helps us is if you are doing those gigs in Aberdeen, and it means those local stations, whether BBC or commercial, are interested in people who are in their area. Either you come from Aberdeen or you're in Aberdeen. And that sort of relates whether you're a new artist or whether you're an unknown artist touring. Touring is starting again now from our last 2 years of, you know, nothing. And as soon as I send something out, whether it's a Bryan Adams tour, a JLS tour, a Steps tour, a Shires tour, whatever, I instantly get radio coming back going, are they available for interview? They're coming to our area, are they available for interview? Now, of course, what is lit within the regions is BBC Introducing for new artists. And I'm sure you and your listeners know what BBC Introducing is.
Oh, yeah. We talk about it a lot.
Yeah, so BBC Introducing for new artists is great. And that is very geographically split. But it's a great platform to getting up. And, of course, Radio 1 have their BBC Introducing section and their own track of the week.
Yeah.
Those BBC Introducing shows are really vital to any new artist, I think. And I think commercial radio is a bit more reluctant to go with new music. They always have been, particularly the big groups. Obviously, they're playing the hits, you know, Capital and that. But there's still ways in. But I think this job isn't one size fits all. I spend most of my time with my team. It's not just me. If you were in Aberdeen, for example, lovely Jackie would be up in Aberdeen with you because she's my rep who's based in Scotland and she'd come to get you some radio.
I don't know why I mentioned Aberdeen, by the way. I've never even been.
There's nothing wrong with mentioning Aberdeen. There's at all. It's, you know. So the local world, to answer your first question, how important it is, it's part of a jigsaw.
Right.
I think it's very important for that first steps for any new artist. In fact, it's vital because let's face it, unless you're like one in a zillion, you're not going to suddenly walk onto Radio 1's playlist as a brand new artist. They're going to be looking. They're very good. The BBC, particularly Radio 1, is very good at looking at what's happening at social media, what's happening, what's trending. But they also need to be tipped off.
Yeah.
And BBC Introducing in the regions or any profile building you're doing gigs, which is linked. Everything's linked nowadays, isn't it? It's not nothing's in isolation. So whether it's regional radio, national radio, press, social media, I think the social media has come first these days. I think a new artist can go and I often get new artists approaching me to ask for us to represent them. And I think their music is good, but they don't need it. I just say to them, you don't need us at the moment, you know.
Right.
I do love an invoice. I love an invoice, but I'm not going to, and I think one of your questions later might come on to that. I'm not going to take money off anybody if I don't think they need us. And I'm certainly not going to think about doing that with an aspiring artist who's saved their well-earned cash. I'd say to people, go and spend it, or don't spend any money, really. Just like people would build their profile on Facebook, go and build your profile as an artist on TikTok or whatever platforms you want, you know.
Yeah.
Because that's the great way, is that you don't actually have to go to Aberdeen to get fans in Aberdeen.
Right,
these days.
Not
mean, they want to see you live, yes, and they will, you know, perhaps that one gig in Aberdeen will give you zillions of followers. But you don't, that isn't the only way these days of getting a fan base. It's a mixture of everything. All I would say is be different.
Yeah.
Don't do what everybody else is doing. Yeah, yeah, point of difference. It's,
it's
an old cliche, but actually, you know, when you think about the new music people in media listen to or get sent, or even the general public, everyone's got so much choice these days, haven't they?
Yeah.
Everyone's got so much stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if it's cats playing the piano, or, you know, aunties falling off a diving board, or whatever it is, everybody has got, I don't know where that one came from, everybody's got so much stuff. And so take your time, I'd say, as a new artist. Don't, you know, pick your battles carefully and be creative.
So you talk so much about, like, new artists. So what's the kind of, because you have artists on your roster that are unsigned and signed, right? So people like the Shires.
Yeah. So
signed.
I'm not gonna sit here because you're talking, you as an artist, your listeners as new artists. I'm not gonna sit here reeling off all the wonderful, super, big artists we've got. They're great to have. Look at our website, you know, copmedia.co.uk. They're great and they open doors for us, because if we were only I've never done this all in 30 years. If we were only coming with one type of music, my view, some people might differ, but in my view, in my world, it's very vast in metro radio. There's lots of different opportunities. Some are mainstream, some are specialists, there's specialist shows. So I think having the big hitters and the mainstream open doors to us because people have got used to us giving them the stars, in inverted commas, mm-hmm. and the records. So when we come with something new, which is good, but no one's heard of it before, or when I ask for that interview for that person in Aberdeen, you know, for you in Aberdeen.
I'd love to go to Aberdeen after this interview.
It's going to be packed, the first gig you do in Aberdeen. It's going to be heaving. It's going to be heaving. Then when you do that, and I ask for interviews, they're more likely to say yes to me because I've already given them Kylie Minogue the week before.
Nice little name drop there. what's the difference in like the campaigns then that you do for the unsigned versus signed artists? Are they very different? And is it? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, completely. Yeah, completely. Mm. I mean, I think the big difference is. We obviously wouldn't, first of all, we wouldn't charge the same for a new artist set-up mm-hmm. campaign as we would for an established artist, obviously. Yeah. I think it's probably more of a case of when you're trying to get a new artist, it's picking your battles and me and my team reaching out and asking. When it's a known artist, it's probably the other way around and we get lots of asks and we can't deliver all the asks because there isn't enough hours in the day. So we have to sort of tailor the promo we do.
Yeah.
With established artists, we're going for playlists, so we're actually trying to get on those station playlists every week, and that's what I spend a lot of my time doing, trying to get on playlists, because the playlists change. You understand playlists, I'd imagine your listeners understand playlists.
Yeah, I have a question about that later on.
So not to be confused with Spotify playlists or stuff. Yeah, different completely. So we're trying to get those artists. And when it comes to new artists, they're, you know, new artists aren't going to get on those mainstream playlists. Mm-hmm. They may get a look in if you suddenly get a new artist, like I'm doing Grace Davis at the moment, who came from...
And
she's not a new artist, but she's had a break.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've come with her record, and she eventually got on Radio 2 just before Christmas, and that helped us get it on playlists in the new year.
Brilliant.
And there's another artist called Ivory Lane from America, likewise. So, and there's some newer artists, but on the whole, they wouldn't be going on the main playlist. So what we're trying to do is get them plays wherever we can get plays. So that's mm-hmm. spot plays, specialist shows, where the shows that aren't dictated to by the head of music playlist, where they have free reign. There used to be more of them. They have reduced a bit. But what is on the growth, which I'm doing a lot of work in, is for community radio.
Okay.
And some of the community radios, a lot of them, I went to the community radio conference. I think community radio is important because that really is local radio in the true sense of the word. And again, I know you might go, oh, you know, what's the point of being on a community radio station? You've got to start somewhere, you know. Mm. If make your mistakes in the small ponds, don't make mistakes in the big. So if you've got to have experience of doing interviews, it's, you know, I know I don't shut up, obviously, doing this, but it's amazing amount of chatterbox artists that when you put them in front of a microphone with a presenter, they completely shut up.
Really?
And they don't know what to talk about.
I'm the opposite. I'm like you. I just keep going and they're like, shut up.
Yeah, me too. You'll probably have to edit this down quite a lot. And please keep that bit.
No, I'm not saying you shut up. But
I'm just saying my timer here, 20 minutes, 19 seconds. So I would just say, you know, never, as new artists, embrace your local radios, whether it's a community, good community music one, a BBC local one, or a BBC interesting, because they are your first step, and you can learn from them. You can learn a lot, and if you're going to do a terrible interview, better to do it on your local community station than on Radio 1.
Yeah, for sure. You know? And that's such a good kind of piece of advice, because I never really thought about, I've done loads of interviews and I've never really thought about it that way, but I guess I have been practicing from the smaller things to, I got interviewed by Jeremy Vine on Radio 2. So by that time that happened, I was probably prepared for it without really knowing that I was prepared for it.
I mean, I don't think it exists. I don't think it's so much now, but I remember in the 90s, there was a lot of manufactured bands, pop bands, obviously. When you do put a lot of people together very quickly, that we used to do media training, and we used to put them in to, with people to train how to learn how to answer questions the right way, and also not silly things like not five people all talk over the, each other right. at the same time. And you know, the drummer doesn't want to talk, you know, the guitarist doesn't want to talk, the lead singer wants to talk, so shove the lead singer, you know. I think the years and years, band probably have quite a quiet promo schedule because Ollie goes and does it. He goes and does all the promo, and he's very good at it, so why not?
That's so interesting, because it does always seem like in interviews on TV especially, you see the one person talking, and sometimes I get annoyed because I'm like, I want to hear about the bassist, but listening to you say that makes me think, oh, it's probably because of this, like, it makes sense.
I think it's a mixture. I think it's sometimes, I think the front person has always had the most attention of a band. That's probably been, you know, whether it was the Beatles or whatever, in a band. I think... Sometimes the band just are happy for the front person to go and talk, because the front person normally is the vocalist, i.e. you hear them. So the people, so I think media and everybody's drawn to that front person. But I think sometimes the band members, not everybody wants to do promo. You know, it's like, you know, it's some people are just quite happy to sit there and make music because that's what they want to do. They don't really want to talk about making music. So it's good. It's a problem if you're a solo artist, of course. You've got no one else to do it for you. So you the bad news is, the good news is you're going to get all the attention. Bad news is you've got to do all the promo because no one else there.
In the height of COVID in 2020, I saw that you worked with the Shires, who I love, by the way, on their album Good Years. And I saw that most of the promo for that had to be done like on the phone and Zoom calls. Like, has the last couple of years changed for you and made your job harder? Or is it now becoming like a good thing that you can do all this over the phone?
Okay, so just before I answer that question, I'll just put this in context if emotionally. So emotionally, it's been a terrible 2 years for everybody and a very sad time. We're not out of the woods yet. And, you know, we've got one of the worst death rates in Europe. And so that is a serious bit. So the 2 years was horrible for everybody. I think what did happen is that in the past, if we had said, the only way you're going to interview any artist when they're brand new, or whether they're the Shires or whoever, is by having them on a screen talking to you, we couldn't even do ISDNs because people couldn't go to other studio in the real lockdown in 2020. People couldn't leave their houses.
What's an ICN? Sorry.
Oh, sorry. It's I never know what it stands for. I should do. it's basically going into a studio and having a direct contact via digital line linked to a studio.
One of those. Yeah.
So it's studio to studio type quality, better than phone quality. And we used to do a lot of them, particularly with the big artists, because they'd be in town. They wouldn't go on a radio tour. Sometimes I take people on radio tours and stuff, but a lot of them didn't have time. Mm-hmm. So we'd sit somewhere in central London and do lots of those. They were off the table. And so this wonderful thing called Zoom came along that no one had really heard of that word before in context. And even the TV shows, that obviously, you know, if you'd said to a TV show, no, I'm sorry, they're not coming into the studio... they're only going to do it on... they would have gone, well, we're not going to have them then.
Yeah.
But, of course, everybody had to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So, very quickly, radio, I can't talk for TV, but regional TV did it as well for us. They had to adapt, and otherwise they weren't going to get anybody. And so... and then I think what people got... A, radio and TV got... actually, this is okay. Everyone's expecting it, and we're not... our audience isn't going to be turned off. B, on radio, the sound quality on Zoom audio or Skype audio or FaceTime audio isn't far off of them being in the studio, if I'm honest with you. And so they actually, for the listener, it didn't probably sound that much different, if I'm brutally honest. And it also meant that people could get people that they would never have stood a chance of getting before. You know, so everybody was, whether you were stuck, everybody was stuck in their own countries. So nobody could come in to do the one show or a big radio junket day. So everything had, so everybody was on the same level playing field. And I think actually, in a very sad way, it actually opened up an awful lot of more promo opportunities for people, because everybody was sitting, and also people were sitting at home doing nothing. Artists were sitting at home. You know, they weren't doing nothing, but they were, I think it made quite a creative time. I think I think at the beginning it was brilliant to hear the stories of all these wonderful musicians being at home in lockdown and writing wonderful music in lockdown. And I think that story got slightly tired after about 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, I think if we all got to the point, oh, not another lockdown session, please. not another lockdown live stream from somebody's bedroom.
Oh,
no.
I feel seen.
But of course there was no choice in the matter. That's what we had to do, and everybody got on with it. Mm. I think it has changed the landscape to a degree, but I also think that people are now, hopefully we're opening up and not to go backwards.
Yeah.
I'm crossing fingers here for radio listeners. Hopefully, I think the idea of going to gigs, getting on the road, doing interviews, we're starting to talk about doing interviews on tour and stuff again as well. With artists, but I think there will be an element of still being able to do that Zoom thing as well.
From an artist's point of view, I think it's really good. Like, I did a thing for Five Live with Scott Mills, and if it wasn't for COVID and for Zoom, that interview would never have happened. So I think it's good for that. And you know, I'm watching things like Graham Norton, and now they're having guests regularly from LA who wouldn't have got on the show otherwise. So I think, you know, it's changed a lot.
I think we'll use the new technology. And I think I know artists. I mean, Kylie Minogue's album, Disco, a lot of that was done with her recording in her home studio. She self-taught herself Pro Tools and recorded vocals. And a lot of, I know Melanie C did the same thing as well. So I think a lot of artists had deadlines to meet and wanted, not only deadlines, but wanted to make music.
Yeah.
And the only way they could do it was if someone set it up at home. And then, of course, the whole magic happened. And people were sending stems from one country to another. You know, I think basically the music industry had to find a way round, because otherwise there wouldn't be any new music.
Exactly.
So I think we did. But a horrible reason to have to find those options.
Exactly,
though.
Yeah, for sure. Right, here's the awkward question about money coming up.
I'm just looking at your questions you sent me. I'm just seeing which is that. Oh, that awkward question. All right, okay.
So, yeah.
The one that you can't get anybody to answer.
Well, yeah. So, to give you an example, like last year I was emailing a plugger, national plugger, about a project I've got coming up. And it was, I was applying for funding. And I had to pitch this thing for funding to be like, right, I want to get this particular plugger for this project. And I just wanted an email back to be like, yeah, it's going to cost $2,000 or whatever, just some sort of ballpark number. And it felt like the hardest answer to get out of this person. And since then I've been looking on like different plugging like websites, and it just seems to be like the price just doesn't seem to be there.
This is I can't speak for other pluggers.
Yeah.
Obviously, I can speak because we've just done 30 minutes and 44 seconds. But anyway, as your listeners probably have worked out. So I can't talk on behalf of other pluggers.
Yeah.
As a business decision, if you came to me on email and I never give a price at the beginning, because until I know what the music is and what the expectations of the campaign are, I can't.
Right.
Okay. But of course, I've got a general idea. I mean, I'm not pricing plugging in the same way as you do your corner shop, and that, you know, it's not like 99p for hobnobs and some other price for sugar and something else for, you know, it's not everything has got a different price. Of course it hasn't.
Yeah.
So what I would do is, if you came to me, or any new artist, or anybody came to me, I would listen to the music, discuss the options, see if we were needed, first of all, if it was the right thing to do, should be working together. And then I'll give a price on an email for... Normally, I'd do it per single. But if I'm honest with you... Well, yeah, I mean, I do it on per single. And the level that a new artist would pay is different to what a big artist would pay. Because there's also less work, if I'm honest. I mean, what we can achieve with... And also, smaller budgets. I have a sort of thing that... It doesn't mean anything, but I call it level one. And that sounds really scientific. All it is the introductory level service of going into plugging for a new artist. And also, I would not send something... It depends on the music. I'm not going to send something to everybody if it's not ready to go to everybody. Two reasons for that. One is, I don't want to clog up my mainstream plugging with lots of things that I know aren't going to get, because otherwise I'm going to have to talk about all those other those songs as well, when I know in fact they're not really going at the level to get on the main playlist.
Yeah,
I need to focus. So that's one. And B, once I've sent your music out, you're on the radar of that tune, and it might not be the right time for everybody to be aware of Lucy May Walker, new song. We may be just going for the battles that we should be fighting at that time, not to everybody. So I would definitely give a price. I don't know why another plugger wouldn't. What I wouldn't do is I wouldn't, on our wonderful website, give you the price on there, because actually I think the main reason to do is because of our competitors.
Okay.
If all, it's quite a small industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've all got on, I think all the pluggers have got an idea of what we all charge. It's about the same.
Okay.
Ish.
So if I was a new artist...
But it's not the same for national plugging.
Okay.
So national plugging is always more expensive.
Forget that. Regional, yeah. I'm a new artist and I'm coming to you with my first single campaign. I would like to plug it with you. Give me some sort of prize.
Oh, can I write it on a piece of paper and feed it through the computer? To be honest with you, I think ballpark.
Yeah.
I would say for a brand new artist, mainstream single, not completely. I mean, I don't take on anything that's really... I mean, I'm not going to do a thrash metal folk record, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
I would say pitching around about 500.
Okay. There we go. I got it out of him.
Yeah, it's not a secret. I'm not going to tell you all my how far it goes up that way. But,
sure.
Yeah, I think the reason we don't, it's, yeah, I would say that's fine. I would also say to people, don't spend money. People might promise you all sorts of things when you're starting off of what they can do for you. Be very wary of what you spend your money on.
Yeah.
You know, there's always out there to take pictures of this and, you know, videos of that. And some of it, I think, is a waste of money.
Yeah.
And I think people should save their money. And as I said to you, if I, even £500, that's for the life of the record. Even that, if I didn't think they needed us, I'd tell them not to do it with us.
I think that shows that you're a good plugger. Whereas it kind of leads me on to my next question, because I think there's, you're one of the good guys.
Oh, thanks.
And I also don't think you'd come on this podcast if you had something to hide. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Whereas...
Well, if, to be honest with you, I don't think I'd have... I wouldn't have lasted 33 years if...
Yeah.
Yeah. Always be nice to the people on the way up, because you'll probably meet them on the way down.
Yeah.
And I think being nice and fair and honest, whether I'm talking... You know, my radio people know I'm prone to perhaps exaggerate slightly. And obviously I'm Mr. Optimistic and enthusiastic about music, I'm plugging them, but they know I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
They know I'm not going to say, oh, this is going to be number one. Mm.
So what are some of the red flags of maybe someone listening to this is currently in talks with promotion, and what are some of the red flags they should be listening out for?
Okay, so I'm going to sort of slightly swerve the question.
Okay.
Because I don't, in one way...
Yeah.
I will answer it, but in one way. I'm not going to make comment about other pluggers on how they work, because we're all... There's some great pluggers out there. Believe you me, I'm not the only good plugger. There are some brilliant ones out there who have been doing it as long as I have.
Yeah.
So shop around, I'd say. Shop around.
Shop around.
I would say outside of promotions... Be careful of what people say they can do for you in the sense of recordings, making videos, doing photo shoots, particularly if you don't know them. If you know them, great.
Mm.
But if you've never met them before, or they suddenly contact you out of the blue because they've seen you in Aberdeen, for example, and they suddenly start talking about building your social media platforms and it's only going to cost you £5,000 and we could do a photo shoot and it's only going to cost you £2,000. I would swerve those people with very politely with a very, wide berth.
Yeah.
I think it depends on enthusiasm. Now, I'm a bit OCD, which just means I'm tidy, and I don't like more than 50 emails in my inbox at any one time.
Oh, God, no, same.
So what I mean by that is, you know, the inbox bit, you know, the bit. Either I read them, I've deleted them, or I filed them,
okay,
and I've replied to them. If someone is not coming back to you, it might just be that they're really busy.
Yeah.
And they haven't got to their email. I had one the other, literally this week, of an artist that came from Canada, and they sent me the over 2 weeks ago, and I hadn't got round to listening to it. And I thought, oh, I must get to that, I did a Zoom with the management yesterday, actually, and apologised. And when I listened to it, it was the best thing I'd heard for ages.
Wow.
There's a guy called I, A-H-I.
Okay.
He's Canadian, and it's brilliant. And I hope to be working with him later this year.
Oh, nice.
But I could have missed that.
Yeah.
I could have missed that completely.
Do you like artists or managers, whoever's reaching out to you, how do you feel about a follow-up email after, like, you know, 5 days?
Okay, so this, another example, an independent artist, unsigned, that came to me last week. Again, he'd sent me an email, I hadn't got around to listening to it. It was one track. Mm. There was no plot or anything. The Canadian guy, that one I just mentioned, had been on Radio 2 playlist this year in January.
Nice.
But this guy, nothing going on, didn't know who he was. And I, again, had sort of swerved the email and thinking, and I had to reply to him. And he was very good at chasing me, but in a non-aggressive way. And I did laugh with him on a Zoom with him last week, because I said, it was just slightly, every email was just slightly sort of, the subtext was, are you going to listen to reply to my music email or not? But he didn't say that.
Yeah,
it was very well worded, and I congratulated him on. And again, his name's called James Aaron, and again, absolutely stunning piece of work, And actually, that record, I've taken to a national plugger because for Radio 2, because I've said, I think it's a good example. He's got nothing going on, and I don't mean that in a horrible way, but he's not signed or anything. It's an amazing record. It's too long. It needs an edit and it needs various things, which I think he might do. But I've said to him, there's no point you employing us on our own. It's a stunning record. It's not like everything else, so it's going to take some work. But if he got there, it would stand out, if you know what I mean, that point of difference. And he's a great vocalist, great production, very good. Just too long for radio. And I said, but there's no point us working on our own. I think if you're going to get a lift on this, you're going to get a Radio 2 lift, and I need to take it to a good Radio 2 plugger. And I took it to the Radio 2 plugger, and that plugger came back to me and said straight away, because I rang him first, and he came back and said, you're absolutely right, it is brilliant, but it's too long.
Yeah.
And it needs. And I went, yep, that's what I'm thinking. So I've gone back to the artist and gone, good news, bad news. Good news is the national plugger, who's a legend at Radio 2, agrees with me, it is fantastic, but it's too long.
Yeah.
And it needs, so I would say gentle follow-ups, but also if they're really not coming back to you, it might be because A, they're really busy, or B, they don't really care. So for me, on those two examples, it was, I was really busy, hadn't got round to listen to it, really glad I did because it was fantastic. Could have missed it.
Mm.
It wasn't not caring.
Yeah.
But I always try and reply to everybody in some way or another. Even if it is just, it's great. Or if it's not great, I'll normally say, we're rather busy at the moment, but I wish you every success for your
campaign. I'll look out for that if I ever email you.
I'm going to get that one. But no, I'm never going to be rude to anybody. I mean, I was in a band and I failed. I never got a recording contract at all. So who am I to start... You know, so I think persistence is good. Don't expect everybody to come back to you straight away. Don't drive people too nuts because they turn. Otherwise, it's a bit like being stalked. And have a look at their website. Do a bit of research on see who they're looking after, because you might be sending your music to the wrong type of plugger.
Mm. So we spoke earlier about playlisting, and I told you that I wanted to get onto it because, oh God, I'm desperate to be on some sort of playlist. But I really want to know, behind the scenes, how does it work? So for people listening, when we talk about radio playlisting, it's like your A playlist, B playlist, C playlist, and those tracks get played like a certain amount of times a week or day, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Who chooses those tracks?
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to disconnect you now. Bye! Beep!
Hey!
That's the best kept secret in show business. We can't...
I have to know.
So basically, it varies. Okay. From, it does vary. On the whole, probably the likes of Radio 1 and Radio 2 and 6, but definitely Radio 1, Radio 2 are done by committee. So there are lots of producers who do all the shows, and so the national pluggers, the, you know, there's not me, the grown-ups, they will plug all the individual producers as well as the heads of music within those organisations, and then those organisations will have meetings once a week where people will sit down and they will decide what records, who brings what to the table. There's always more records brought in every week than can possibly be discussed in one meeting. However, I would say Radio 1, Radio 2 probably spend the longest time discussing records. And Radio 2 particularly is less worried about what that record is done on streams. Or, I mean, that plays a part, obviously. But, or where it is in the chart. I mean, Radio 2's audience aren't single buyers as such. They're album buyers. Therefore, they're not going to get too obsessed if something they're playing on high rotation isn't a big hit in the singles chart. Yeah. Whereas Radio 1 and Capital and other commercial stations, probably hit stations, are more do have to think about their audience would expect them to be playing the big hit singles. So your playlist is done either by committee in those BBCs, or commercial radio often comes down to one or two people. And they're the people that I spend most of my life being bestest friends with.
So it's kind of down to who your plugger knows.
Well, it's not, I would be very arrogant sounding that just because I've been, you know, doing it, they always put all my records on. They don't. I think it's more about is I can't change the record. I can't, you know, other people will be building social platforms and streams and all that. That's, I will take the plot to these people, but because they've known me a long time, and other pluggers who do what I do, as I say, they're more likely to listen to me about the new Lucy May Walker record than they are, no disrespect to Lucy May Walker.
None taken.
However, BBC introducing in your area, in Aberdeen, for example, as we keep going back there, they're more likely, the BBC, we do talk to all the individual presenters, but actually, when it comes to uploading your stuff, it should be uploaded by you to the BBC uploading system on their uploader service, rather than us servicing it for you. Because officially what it should be is it should come from the artist. So you, the first step would be, and those presenters are very good at looking at what comes in each week on their BBC introducing platforms. Now, if you're uploading in London, bad news, there's a lot of people in London and the South East. You might have more chance of being noticed in Aberdeen BBC introducing area because there's less competition, less people.
But less so people,
when it comes to those and sending stuff, and also I would say to people, if you've got a presenter that you like, or we must talk about student radio as well. That's another important thing we do.
Okay.
That student radio network has been pulled together brilliantly in recent years, and so they're much more collective body now, and there's a portal that we use that then sends out via that with an organisation and a head of music in such, who sends it all out to the students for them to review. He doesn't choose it, but they review, and then they come back, and their shortlist is researched of what records that we and other pluggers have sent, and it's those ones that then get a chance to be on student radio.
Nice, so, and that's a nicer young audience as well that you're
absolutely
tapping into, isn't it?
Yes, and it's vast, and it's always, you know, it's the only problem with student radio. Sorry if any student radio people are listening. Student radio is brilliant. The only thing is, it's like any station, like community stations, for example. If you've, a lot of my heads of music at BBC and commercial radio have been there years, and they're there every week, and I know how to get hold of them, and they're there all the time. When you've got people changing at community radios or student radio from term time to term time, it's sometimes you just get a relationship with one person, and then they move on to another role. But that's just, it's always been like that. So I think that the playlist isn't complete. They do, I mean, you look at radio, if you look online, you'll see the Radio 1 2 playlist up online. It's not a complete guarded secret. It's obviously, if you can imagine what it would be like if every single artist who had something out, was trying to deliver music to these organisations on a weekly basis, basically, or it would be lost. So it's my job, and other pluggers are available, other companies are available, is to try and get your stuff noticed and tell them why and encourage them. But I can't make them play it. But, you know, they're used to these dulcet tones, so they hopefully sometimes take notice. It doesn't always work, of course.
Sure. Back to BBC. This is my last question before the question that you hopefully are going to inspire us with. So, just the BBC quickly. I know that came out, like, I think last week, that the BBC licence fee is going to be scrapped, right, in 2027.
Well, if the government gets its way. Yeah.
And if that goes ahead, like, a lot of people are happy about it because they go, I don't have to pay my fee, but how is...
One of them.
Yeah, how is that going to affect people like you?
I would say it is absolute disaster for broadcasting and music and entertainment in this country. And I shall tell you my reasons for that.
Yeah.
The BBC, I fully understand the BBC body is a very big body. Perhaps it gets too big. But what it is, what it does do, it's not reliant on advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And if your listeners want to have a little look at something, now I'm not saying there's anything wrong with ITV or whatever, but just have a look at the schedules compared on the BBC One and ITV One.
Yeah.
Just look at the schedules of what types of programme are being done by those two organisations, and I think you've got your answer.
Yeah, very, very different.
Very different, and if you look at radio, and I'm not criticising commercial radio or TV here, they've got a role to play. I'm sure they would love to be financed by the great British public. You know, they don't have that option. You know, they if it was a level playing field and everybody got financed by the great British public, not just the BBC, then that would be a very fair playing field for everybody. It is unfair that the commercial sector do not have the luxury that the BBC sector has.
Yeah.
In my opinion, because they are financed by commercials and those commercial bodies obviously are advertising things they want to advertise against their products for, it is bound to affect the content of those shows.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's more likely to go mass appeal than it is very new, experimental. I don't think the BBC, in its quality of output, wastes the money.
Very well answered, Steve. Okay, we have come to the end of the podcast, and I ask every guest...
Is anybody out there still, or have they just not... Is anybody left?
We'll see.
Have they just nodded off?
I might edit it. So yeah, I ask every guest this question, because the title of the podcast is Music Industry Secrets Spilled. Steve Tandy, what is your industry secret?
Okay, so as I explained to you a little while ago, when I read that on your list, I misunderstood the question. And obviously, you might be wanting to hear the tittle-tattle and the secrets of my artist, which, of course, I'm never going to say at all. But what I would say is, linked to my answer, really, is be honest and be clear. And in the music business, don't gossip. Don't talk. I mean, you can imagine, I've been told a zillion things. I've witnessed a zillion things in my life as a plugger. I'm never going to reiterate any of them, and I'm never, ever going to write a book about them.
Right.
That isn't my job.
Yeah.
I'm not a journalist. I'm not a tabloid journalist. I'm a plugger, and people give me their music to protect, and they're you know, you're working with artists, they're not my best friends, I don't hang out with them all the time, but for the time we're working a campaign, yes, we do work closely together, and I have to respect that. An interesting fact, I've only had my picture taken with one artist I've worked with in 33 years.
Wow.
And that is Shirley Manson from Garbage. And we were backstage at a gig. I have never had my picture taken alongside any artist I work with. And the reason that is I never feel comfortable about doing it because I don't think that's my job. I'm not a fan. I might be a fan of them, but it never seems right. So I would say the secret of the music business is be honest. Don't get sucked into the nonsense. There's a lot of nonsense out there. And believe in what you're doing. Most of the people that have been successful, I would say all of them, actually, if I'm honest, whether it's Adele or whether it's Ed Sheeran or whether it's going way back to the early, you know, they've all been told they're rubbish and they've all been told it won't work.
Yeah, but they believe in themselves.
And they believe themselves and they have the ability to just keep going. No one's going to push Lucy May Walker more than Lucy May Walker.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you've not
even
heard...
Well, apart from pop media, obviously.
Yeah, there we go. Amazing. Oh, right. Steve, thank you so
much. That's a bit of a fudgy, funny answer.
No, that's perfect. Yeah, be honest. I think it's, you know, doing things like this and having, like, real chats where you kind of delve a little bit deeper into the person speaking. Yeah, I love it. I enjoy your answer. Thank you very much.
All right, then. Thank you. A pleasure.
And there we have it. I told you we could talk, didn't I? I really hope that was as informative and interesting for you as it was for me. Honestly, I think that interview could have gone on for about 3 hours because I still have so many more questions I want to ask. But yeah, I thought it was really, really good insight into radio, especially, and also TV. I also thought his industry secret was a really good one, especially for those working behind the scenes, because people talk, don't they? And believe me, I bloody love a gossip, hence this whole podcast. But it's nice to know that there are people out there looking for your best interests and... working with someone like Steve, you know you're going to be in really, really good hands. I also think myself having that in and past experience with Radio 2 has made me so hungry for more Radio 2 plays. And, you know, I kind of get set on being playlisted. And actually, this talk made me think maybe it's a good time to step back sometimes and realise that national radio isn't the only radio out there. There's so much more. And if I do ever do a show in, for God's sake, Aberdeen, and I do feel like I owe it to Aberdeen to do so now, it would be worth looking into getting someone like Steve who might have contacts over there. And it could end up reaching the right people and selling more tickets. So yeah, really, really good insight and made me think of a different side of radio that I might not have done without this chat. So a massive thank you to Steve Tandy for taking the time out to talk with me on this podcast. And thank you, dear listener, if you made it. You can tune in next Monday for a brand new episode with another industry guest. But until then, love you. Bye.